This is the Average Guy Network, and you have found Home Gadget Geek show number 667 with guest Christian Johnson, recorded on January 15th, 2026. Here at Home Gadget Geeks, we cover all the favorite tech gadgets that find their way into your home. News, reviews, product updates, and conversation, all through the Average Tech Guy. I'm your host, Jim Collison, broadcasting from the AverageGuy.tv studios here in a beautiful Bellevue, Nebraska. It's beautiful because it's winter, but it's not that cold. I don't know, Christian, about you up there in the Maryland area. It's been unseasonably easy as a winter. Maybe, are you feeling that at all, or is it just Nebraska?
I don't know. It's certainly we've had some interesting warm spikes. Yeah. We've only had one brief cold spell so far and no real snow to deal with. So yeah, maybe that's right. So far.
I know. And it's mid-January and you're kind of thinking, well, yeah, there's maybe 8 weeks of winter,
right?
Possibility. Right. And yeah, you get that occasional weird storm in April. We've had it snow as late as May. But I'm kind of feeling good about the winter. I just jinxed it. And that's now we're going to get crushed. Well, anyways.
Make sure your HVAC is tuned up. We just installed a brand new one and I'm putting a cold climate, Dave Lennox signature. And I'm nice. On the one hand, happy with that. On the other hand, I'm like, when will the cold climate arrive?
No, that guarantees it's never going to get cold again.
Yeah.
I bought a generator. No, power hasn't gone out since.
We'll never go out again.
No.
That's right.
No, it always works that way. Well, we'll post the show with some world-class show notes out at theaverageguy.tv. Big thanks to our Patreon subscribers. If you want to join that team, there's a few spots open there for you. Bob Carpenter just recently joined us, and you can too. Head out to theaverageguy.tv/Patreon if you want to join that team. $5 plans, do it for 1 month or as long as you want to hang around on the team. Listen, many of you have been on that Patreon team forever. I appreciate you guys doing that. So thanks for all those who do that. And then if you're purchasing, I know the holidays are over, but we're still not buying gadgets, right? Everybody's still buying gadgets. Those things you didn't get for Christmas, head out to theaverageguy.tv. Of course, powered by Maple Grove Partners. Don't forget about that. Head out to theaverageguy.tv. Click on there's an Amazon affiliate link. You just click through it. You don't have to do anything else, and we benefit from that as well. Christian Johnson's back. Christian, I'm supposed to have you for 666. You alluded that earlier. That was going to be the 15th anniversary of Home Gadget Geeks. Mm-hmm. We're gonna talk a little bit about LePro lighting here in just a second, but let's dive in. 15 years.
Yeah.
We've been doing this 15, what? I've been doing it not every week, but most weeks. You've been on again, off again over the last decade or so. How's that make you feel? 15 years
old. But at least we could probably have AI take like a thumbnail from every single episode and stitch it together and be like, this is how much older you now look. And it would be easy to do. It wouldn't be a hard experiment now. So
yeah, that would be crazy, wouldn't it? Maybe the both of us. I had darker hair.
Yeah,
you were a lot younger.
Create one of those like white book flip pages where you flip one page at a time and That'd be kind of fun.
Good use of AI, maybe. Speaking of AI, this is a miracle. Tony Rayner and John Biggs here at the same time. And unbelievable. So, gentlemen, thank you for being here. I know you guys, I thought maybe at some point you guys were the same guy, but good to have you both here. 15 years, hey, big thanks to our listeners, whether you've been listening for the last year or you've been here since the beginning. Or you listen to me, and I think you were on Home Server Show. Did we ever have you on Home Server Show?
Yeah.
Did you ever?
That was actually how we originally got connected, was a guest appearance on Home Server Show in 2011.
Did Zadler find you? Was that I think Zadler found
you
somewhere, right? Was it through BIOS mods?
It was actually the original Magic Wake on LAN for Windows Home Server plugin for Server 2003. And I think Johnny was one of the first customers and then was like, wait a second, you need to come on this show.
Yeah. Yeah. So I remember him talking to me. Hey, Bust Out says he's here too. So thanks for coming out. I remember him saying, I was chatting with him on a Saturday or something, and he's like, I met this kid. He's like 15 and he's doing all this cool stuff. You got to meet him. You know, I remember that day.
Yeah.
And him talking to me about that. We had you on and met you. Then we started talking and started digging in. And then said, hey, let's start our own show kind of thing. And super fun. 15 years later, here we are.
And then hosting Average Guy has been a great experiment into building out hosting hardware, which, you know, is kind of sad in some ways now, too, because as much as I love doing the hosting for the Average Guy and other communities, it's almost impossible to host like AI in your basement, like the model of 15 years ago when we were doing the Average Guy in your basement type hosting. It's just the economy of scale power wise is just a little bit different.
So
consumer grade hardware is just going to get interesting. I mean, if you think about NVIDIA announced at the CES conference this year their Vera Rubin platform, which was impressive because normally when a chip manufacturer does a redesign for next generation, they don't change all the chips at once. They usually change maybe one or two, but like doing six or eight all together is kind of like crazy. And of course, that's exactly what they did. And so from Blackwell to Vera Rubin was like this insane amount of, I think it's like 250 terabytes per second. Interconnect. I don't remember the full statistics, but it's like what is in one rack of Vera Rubin is almost like 5x Blackwell. And you know, they're the cooling technology that they used, I think has helped them have this massive 5x. But it's like when you look at the generational jump they made in one move of enterprise NVIDIA AI hardware, and then compare that to the level of move on the retail side where it's like, you know, you want to go buy a 5090 GPU, you can go buy a 5090 GPU, but like, are you really going to be excited about the 6090 GPU that there's no real anything about anything to discuss? Yeah. Probably not. And so in some ways, the consumer and retail side hardware is getting much less love as a result.
For sure, right? I mean, we've seen RAM prices just go through the roof. Hard drives, same, not as much of from a percentage. But I was tracking hard drive prices for a long time because of the Chia that I mine. And then it was getting down. We got almost to $1 a terabyte or $10 a terabyte, something like that. And it bounced to that level for a moment. And then it was gone and it was back up 30 or 40%, whatever. RAM is out of control, right? I mean, we're not building systems. You know, I was glad 2 years ago when I built my system, I put 120 gig of RAM in it, just filled it out. I'm glad I did. Like, I wouldn't want to try to buy that for whatever reason, you know, and have to come across that. From a hosting standpoint, when we think of Maple Grove Partners, is this affecting you guys at all from, you know, it's just a cycle. You're just going to wait through it. There may be some cheap hardware on the backside.
I mean, you're kind of crazy to chase DDR5 RAM right now, unless you're doing high end AI applications. Like, you
somebody
can,
else is paying for it.
Yeah, someone else would pay for that. but certainly, like, you can get really plenty capable systems for most web hosting use cases in the DDR4 generation still. You're going to pay a fraction and still meet most application demands that are needed. And if you need to scale those, just get more DDR4 based things.
But it's pulling the price of DDR4 up too, right?
But it's still like an order of magnitude difference. Interesting times.
Joe says he had a client gift him a server with 192 gig of RAM, DDR4, right? And air crushing. Might take the rest of the year to sell that thing.
Take the gift.
And then Bust Out said, had a hard time getting a replacement 128 gig SSD when one of my Proxmox bucks started dying. And it's created a little bit of a bottleneck in supply chain as folks are focusing. Who was it that decided they were just going to do commercial grade stuff? And I forget the name of it now. I should know that. I just heard it today. One of the chip makers said, peace out, consumers. We'll be back. We'll be back when the AI boom is over, right? And so for us builders, for us system builders, that gets a little bit, it's getting a little bit dicey out there. Listen, I would think most of us are in pretty good shape to just sit tight, let this bubble do its thing, right? There may be some good opportunities for those who wait on the back end. I'm thinking of Maple Grove Partners. Christian, if you guys wait through this, there could be on the back end of this thing, there could be a glut, which would benefit you, right?
Definitely. I mean, at some point, I want to hope that we get to a place that the algorithms either gain efficiency or the demand curve go, like, and there's actually a couple different reasons demand could go down. One of them could be just the sheer, like, electricity is currently the limiting factor, not chip production. So if backlogs remain high because data centers can't land these things fast enough, then that may create enough excess supply to then drive down costs for quite some time. Alternatively, the algorithms get more efficient and then memory demand gets lower. I have a feeling that's not going to be the case for a while, but we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think it's going to take, this won't be tomorrow. I think it's going to take us a good part of the year to work through this to see what happens. You know, you never know. You know, I lived through the dot-com bubble and it was great until it wasn't. And one day it just, you don't know. It's like everything's great and everybody's optimistic and this sounds great. And then a piece of news or two comes out and I remember when the bubble burst with .com, feeling it actually like, oh, this feels different. And it, you know, the market pulls back a little bit and everybody starts warning. And then there's this, oh, maybe this isn't it. And so then people buy back in thinking it was just a bounce and then it's not. It just flushes out. And I lived through that. I mean, I've lived through the financial crisis of 2008. And that same, you know, the market's same for different reasons, right? Totally different reasons. But, you know, we keep talking about this bubble, this AI bubble. And people are just, and this is almost the sign of a bubble when people are like, no, I think this is sustainable. And you're kind of like, I don't know how it can be, right? Yeah. You know? And so buckle up, friends, especially for us. Most of the folks who listen to this, you're in the consumer space or you're working as a sysadmin in an organization. The thing about both the dot-com bubble and it was a housing crisis in 2008, right? But led to other things. We're back on the other side, right? And so this too shall pass. Just don't make stupid decisions. I always say when it's falling, don't make dumb decisions. Don't make any decisions if you don't have to, right?
Yeah.
I think we've got some interesting days ahead for this and how AI goes. So, speaking of AI, I promised the guys over at LaPro. I put the link in the chat to some whole house lighting, permanent outdoor lights. And Christian, let me ask you this question: I don't want to say you're a new homeowner because you bought that house a while ago,
5 years ago. Now.
Yeah, that's 5 years, right? Right. Was it during the pandemic?
3 days after. Yeah. Oh, yep. Good times.
That's crazy to think. Yeah. So 5 years ago, it's just five years ago. Christmas lights. Do you know, this is when we think about outdoor house lighting, Christmas is what kind of kicks it off, but there's other applications for it. I'm seeing more and more folks do lights at different times of the year. Have you gone down that route of hanging them or, you know, buying them?
It's funny because I felt like I had all I could do to get Christmas lights on the Christmas tree this year and get the Christmas tree in before Christmas. Answer, no. We've done lots of landscaping lights, which are like M16 LED type bulbs, but we haven't gotten to the point of what is depicted here where you're going to run around the house and do all the light hanging. So
yeah. One of the things, you know, I have tried over the years to do, you know, I would wait till after Christmas and I would buy the Christmas lights on clearance, right? Because that's the best time, you know, December 27th is the best time to buy Christmas lights. Couple years ago, Philips came out with some inexpensive Christmas lights that were also, you could choose the colors, right? You think, see what's on screen here. You could set, I don't know, let's say 8 different routines of different kind of color palettes that you want to put on there. So there were different color combinations, red, white, and blue, right? That obvious, a 4th of July for in here in the United States, or oranges for Halloween, or magenta colors for Easter kind of deal, right? They had these preset colors. But it was still in that green, you know what I'm talking about, the green house light form factor, the wires that if you kind of blow on them.
Yeah. They disintegrate. Is this the year?
Yeah. You're like, how long are they going to last? Yeah. There's been a trend in LaPro. I'll throw the link. It's in the chat here for the live folks, and I'll throw it in the show notes as well so you guys can see it. LaPro reached out to me and said, hey, would you review or would you put up some of these lights? If we sent them to you. And I said, yeah. Now, don't get me wrong. Like anything along the lines of whole house lighting and, you know, what I'm showing, the package I'm showing, they come in 50-foot increments, right? So it's about $100 a foot. So 50 foot would be 100, 200 for the 100 foot, then 150 foot, about 300. And, large, and let me, you know, when you think of this lighting, let's see if they got a picture of those on there. I don't think they do. I have a picture of them that I'll show you here in just a second. But pretty large, if you think about like a silver dollar size lights, right? These are, you know, these are hefty. They've got stickers on the back that you can stick them onto your house if you want to. They have a loop that you can put a screw in. So if you want to screw them into the house, you'll see a picture here in just a second. I ended up in my eaves. I didn't want to permanently attach them to my eaves because I wasn't sure this is where I wanted them to go. And those eaves are vinyl siding, and I didn't want to put a bunch of holes in my vinyl siding. So I took some shims, and I just put them on the end of shims, and I slid the shims into the vinyl siding so that they're not, so they're fixed, but that it wasn't a permanent fixing. I can move those on. I'll actually probably pick up some some heavier shims and adjust those. But you can see here, you know, when we think about whole house lighting, you can get kind of crazy. And you're like, yeah, Jim, but your house doesn't look like that. So maybe it does, though. Hold on. Let me replace that with this. I went out the other night then and took some home videos of this. We'll throw that up in the share. And you can kind of see, this is my house. And, you know, she saw those pictures online and you're like, oh, that's somebody else's house. No, this is actually pretty doable. Now, Christian, this was a 2-hour setup for me. I'll be honest. I didn't do the high eaves, right?
Okay. I was like, yeah, that would be one of my challenges. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, I'm going to keep these kind of low. There are services. There's, you know, there's folks you can pay to install these for you, but I think they're intended to be kind of installed on a permanent basis. You can see the solar panels there. There's a good shot of the solar panels and the lights moving around. It gives me an opportunity to put those, to show that off. Maybe 2 hours of install at this point. So out with a ladder, plugging these in, putting them on the shims, getting in the right place, bringing them down. They've got some sections of wire where if you want to go some distance in between a section or two, you can insert those in. They've got different controls for them. All 150 feet that you saw there, I'll play that again. All 150 feet you saw there, 30 watts of power draw on that. So, you know, when we think about the efficiency of LCD and LCD lighting, 30 watts, not bad for that kind of, you know, that kind of setup. I don't know, Christian, after seeing this and thinking about your own, well, and let me also say each one of these lights is also addressable. So I could go in, I'll show you in the app here in a second. I could go in and set these to permanent brightness or light color or whatever. So they're always the same. I'll show you on the app here in a second. But as you see this, does this give you any ideas of like, if you're going to do some lighting on your place, do you go this route instead of maybe doing what you're doing before?
Yeah, that's pretty cool. In my case, I wasn't doing anything before, so this is inspiration. One of the things that I joke about is that it is almost, your video is almost doing the exact color pattern right now of my keyboard, just as more of a rainfall. So it reminds me a lot of the same style of RGB activities that you can do with computer hardware. So that's pretty cool. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, they're very neat. Certainly LEDs are, from a longevity standpoint, I think a much better investment than buying the lights that keep failing every couple of years. But also the programmability of this to do, you know, customizations, I think is pretty unique. Pretty intrigued by the fact that you can get as nerded out as you want with programming the individual lights. So
yeah, if you want to dig in, you know, you can come in. They showed this on the app. You can come into the DIY spot and kind of customize everything. Now, be super transparent with you, I'm not a DIY customize everything kind of guy, but you could if you wanted to control everything, set your own colors, set them, control them, set them up, brightness, dimness.
How many presets does it come with?
Well, it's kind of unlimited presets. So like you on the AI, and of course, you know, this everything's AI-ified right at this point, but you can come in and either with your, you know, you can either type it in or if you and say what kind of lighting you want. So like I could say, let me come in here and say, I'll just say Star Wars. So give me some Star Wars lighting. Right. So then it's going to come up and give me some AI options for, okay, this is its interpretation of what you're saying with Star Wars. And so I can click on that, take me over to the AI side of things. And it's going to give me 7 or 8 presets on what its interpretation of Star Wars lighting could look like. So I've got some moving lights here. I've got a snake, we'll call it, right? Some maybe minimalist lighting that's here, and you just can choose any one of these. This is live in my setup. So as I click on this right now, it's now outdoors changing to those colors. What's kind of interesting about this is my granddaughter was over on last Saturday night. And I said, hey, you want to play with the new outside lights? And we just sat there and put up one AI thing after another. She picked different colors. If you want to save them, you can. So you can come in here and you can edit that. If you want to drop in and choose different colors on that preset, you can do that. And then just save it as your own setup, right? And you can always come back. The presets are pretty unlimited that way. And you come back and choose if you've got something you like, you can come back and grab it.
Does it have a music integration at all?
Yeah, so that's a super great question. Almost like I set you up for that. So you can come in with the music piece here, and in this case, it's pulling it off of the microphone. Okay, so my phone is right here. It's pulling it off the microphone from my phone. I don't have a mic outdoors on this one thing. So you're seeing as I'm talking here, the lights are moving, right? So it's listening from a music standpoint. So if we were playing music, my phone was outside, it would pick up that music and play those things, you know, do the lights associated with it. I'll be honest with it. I haven't dug in to figure out, are there some ways to do that? You know, certainly during the 4th of July here in the United States, as we're firing off fireworks, it'd be cool if it was time to some of those fireworks, or if you're playing music associated, and I haven't done that yet, of timing it with the music, so to speak. So the AI piece gives you some flexibility on that. If you don't have to choose anything, pick it, click the button, and you're off to the races from it. Comes with a pretty hefty power setup. It's got a transformer that's outdoor rated, so that I installed that on the deck. It's got a on-off switch on the outside as well that I put up underneath the overhang, so it's protected and covered. It's weatherproof, so you can... You know, you can be rest assured you can put this outside even in cold conditions. I think IP67 or something rated on that. You can get more details on it. LePro, LePRO provided this to me, just to be super clear with that. But Christian, it was one of those you know, it was one of those setups that I'm like, and I'll be honest with you, my neighbor did this with another brand. Govee plays in that space a little bit too, and there's some different options with that. He did it first, and I thought, oh. And so when they asked, I was like, yeah, this would be kind of fun. So we have neighborhood battles now. Who can have the coolest outdoor, outdoor lighting? You saw, I think, in the chat. Let me see if I can find that. So Bust Out said, hold on, let me get to the chat piece here. Come down. He said, nice recharging with the solar Christmas lights to recover some of that light. You saw I've got my solar panels out on the front of the deck. Of course, I brought the lights around the solar panels. And I actually installed a bunch of them with zip ties. Like I didn't want to permanently install these, so I just zip tied them onto some things and snipped the zip tie and, you know, put it on either end. You know, they've got little round lights and then the wires come off on either side, just zip tie them on and you could put them up. Cause this would be honestly one of those gadgets that you would like, hey, I'd like to try this on my house before I, you know, I permanently start installing this.
Yeah.
You know,
now in that other view on that app, there was a section for photos. Is that so that you can upload a photo and it can pull the colors out from that
correct.
Photo?
Okay. Correct. Yeah. Yeah. So you can give it a color palette, say match this color palette, which, you know, you'd think like maybe you see somebody else's house that's doing this. You're like, yeah. Oh, I really like those colors.
It's a pretty attractive deal. I mean, it looks like they have the right features to have some fun with it. So
yeah. Yeah. Good stuff. So big thanks to LePro for sending those out. And I'll include the link to their website I don't have an affiliate thing there, but you can check out the information on that as well. Super cool, like home gadget that, you know, we're home gadget geeks. This is maybe one of those home gadgets. Christian, I saw one of, I was watching videos on different people as I was setting this up, right? I was watching videos just how other people were setting this up and some of the cool things they were choosing to do. And I watched a guy take the strip lighting, and LePro also has some of that strip lighting, but they took the strip lighting LEDs and put them around their garage doors and, you know, just around the frame of the garage door on the inside, and then set up proximity sensors. So when this was tied to the guy's phone, when he pulled up in his driveway with his phone, the geofencing said, oh, he's home, and it lit up the garage. It lit up the garage, you know, the outline of the garage, which I thought was another super cool idea on lighting. As I was thinking about these lights, I also thought since they're addressable, each one of the lights is addressable, you could display them in whatever you want to do till say 10 o'clock. And then it could maybe switch over to a mode where it goes into a security mode and maybe just certain lights are on. So you're not having them all on, but you're getting your security areas. I know there's, you ever feel like in your house, there's just some areas you want lit?
100%.
You know?
I mean, it's one of the nice pieces about landscape lighting too. It's like, even from an outside perspective, there are areas that you just want lit that ordinarily aren't, but also in houses, I feel like there's such a, I don't know, maybe this is just a me problem, but it has taken me a long time to have opinions about what color bulbs do you want where in the house, and are you going to use them consistently across, and like, are you that 5,000 Kelvin kind of person or that candlelight colored kind of person, and which colors are right for which rooms. And I find it's not as easy as you would think.
Yeah. And your spouse may, this is our case, Sarah likes a different hue than I like.
Right.
She's like, oh, that thing, it gives me a headache at that temperature, so to speak. I'm like, oh, I kind of like that temperature, you know? Right.
Yeah.
Right. And here's the crazy thing. I don't think, you know, a couple years ago, 10 years ago, we didn't care for the most part. You could, by the way, you could buy lights in different temperatures forever, right? They've had them. But we now can control them. And so that adds, there's some chat coming in about what the right K is for these lights, right? But, you know, now that we can control them, do you, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you tune them?
It'd be kind of cool, actually, if it adjusted the color of the room based on knowing who is in the room.
How'd you do that? You could do that today, couldn't you?
Well, like if, you know, you have your phone on you, for example.
Yeah.
So let's say you're only in the room and it knows that that's assigned with a color preference. It could just automatically make that change. Because like even like Wyze bulbs, for example, you can set the hue profile. So that's kind of an interesting thought in my mind.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Auto adjust colors based on who's in the room and what presets are known about.
Well, and a brightness is another, you know, is another level on that of like, what's appropriate? When do you want them dim? You know, as an example, we have a light over the litter box for the cat. We have a light at our front door that Sarah likes on all the time. Both are controllable. But you know, overnight we don't want them burning full blast. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. So you turn them, you set them at 50% or whatever. And we, you know, we're content with them at that. Our whole, I don't know about you, but our whole house, there's not a spot you can go that doesn't have some kind of light on. Sarah loves lights. And yeah. So we've got lights just about everywhere. When we started doing the solar panel experience, you know, and I was kind of testing to see like, could we go mostly off grid? And I started measuring everything. And I said, no, we waste. When you're on grid, you just don't have any discipline for like, no, you're just like, no, I want to leave these lights on at certain times or all night, so to speak, or,
you know. Yeah, no, it's true.
Yeah. The hard part, and John is alluding to this in the chat, is when your house has different temperature lights all over the place and it's not consistent, right? Is that weird?
You know, yes. 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 The answer is absolutely yes. And I'm like the biggest defender of it. Cause like even in my, cave down here, these are the brighter, daytime lights. Now they're adjustable, they're dimmable, but they're at the higher, color spectrum. And then, the stairwell light is back to the candlelight color. So it's kind of, it's just strange. I can't say that I thought, oh, when I move in the house, I'm going to find every light fixture and change it to some type of light bulb setting that's consistent or LED. Now, we got pretty much rid of all the like incandescents and straight to the LEDs. But like it's a pretty big spectrum. Like some are Wyze bulbs, some are just fixed LED bulbs.
Well, then that's the thing, right? You get some replacement bulbs and they're 4,000, let's say. And then, but you don't really thinking about it. And then the next time you're like, oh, you get a couple bulbs in there, 3,200.
Right.
And then, whatever, I'm going to put them in. And then you start like, oh, these weren't the same. You know, these weren't. And then you start buying bulbs from, you've got some Hue bulbs, you got some Wyze bulbs, you got some Wyze bulbs, you got some. And then you're figuring, what apps do I need to pull them all together?
I need the bridge, connect all the different companies. Yeah, it's kind of tough. That's actually one of the things that I think makes home automation or just like enhancement both fun and frustrating all at the same time, is that there is a saturated market at this point. And so like, if you think about inner compatibility with the stuff you have, and then do you have buyer's remorse of the things that you do have? And so how do you deal with that buyer's remorse? Do you try to go multi ecosystem, or you're like, I'm going to throw it out and start over. Yeah. And I think most people don't want to throw out what they've already invested in.
It's $20.
So then they go to the multi ecosystem and then they get frustrated that they got to do it five different ways to get kind of what they want. But I do think a lot of it is trial and error against people's preferences. Like, you know, for example, I've used a lot of Wyze cams and Wyze bulbs. I think they're cheap. They're fun. I think they've improved their hardware tremendously since they started. Like compare a Wyze cam OG to a Wyze cam 4 and you'll be like, oh my gosh, it's like, it's not even close to the same product. But then go compare your Wyze to like Ring. And I actually think Ring is a bit higher end in total, in terms of the experience. And, but like, I'm not motivated in the slightest to throw away all the Wyze based stuff I bought and go to Ring. No. And I don't want to go to a mixed ecosystem. So what am I going to do? I'm going to keep buying more Wyze stuff.
Yeah.
So you just kind of get into these weird vendor ecosystems within the home automation space, whether it's lights or cameras or garage doors or window blinds or like pick your thing. It's not, I don't think there's great guidance on how to strategically think about that before you just start buying things.
Yeah. Well, and if you say you started in the ecosystem, you know, 5 years ago, you know, I've got a bunch of Hue bulbs that, you know, that I mixed in with some Wyze bulbs, and you're like, those Hue bulbs were expensive when I first bought them. Right. Yep. And then you're like, well, you don't want to just throw away a good light. Why would I throw away a good light? You know, here's the other obsession with this, Christian. Since I started doing solar, I started purchasing these, you know, these are Tapo from TP-Link. And these monitor the power output. This is how I know those lights,
you
know, that 150 foot string is 30 watts because this is indoor. So I went and pulled it off so it wouldn't get rained on. But, that's how I know it's 30 watts. You start measuring then all these things too. And you're like, oh gosh, man, that thing that I leave on actually is a hog. Right. It's pulling some power down, or these lights, you know, maybe some legacy lights that you got outdoors that you know, you plug one of these things into and you're like, holy crap, this is 120 watts continuous running all the time. You know, you start thinking like, okay, does that, you know, you add up enough of those, and you start thinking Ed Sullivan, who's a good friend of the show. He, once I started doing solar, he's like, you're going to measure everything, and then you're going to start turning lights off and leaving lights off so that you're not, you know, because you start making these decisions of like, man, that light's on all the time. That light's 120 watts. This is for some folks, you know, we've put the incandescent bulbs we've replaced on the inside of our house. But when was the last time you checked the outside of your house? Like,
yes,
those lights almost never go out, but you flip those bad boys on. Yeah, they're a blazing spotlight, but it may be one of those old incandescent that's probably not the right technology, but one of those older bulbs that's burning at 120, 150 watts. You know, have you gone around? Have you replaced your outdoor lights too with?
We've just started replacing the landscape lights. Interestingly, those like MR16 bulbs, they don't die, they just get really dim over time. They just like slowly go into the ether. But the floodlights, yes, I've had to replace two. I want to say I replaced both on the side I could climb onto on the roof, and the other side is it's about there. Like they work, but it's about there. So I'll get motivated one of these days to get a giant ladder out and go not kill myself to do it. But, it's not for the faint of heart activity. Yeah. So kind of want to plan to have a day that you can take your time to do it the right way.
Yeah. Yeah. You almost have to think like when you're installing lights, I think sometimes we think about the optimal position for it. So you're like, yeah, if I could just get it up on the peak of the house up there, and you're thinking, friends, that's two stories up.
Yeah.
You know, you're going a ways up there, and that bulb's not going to last forever, and you need to find an easy way to, you know, you kind of find an easy way to replace that thing. Mm-hmm. And so it's, yeah, lighting is a challenge. And for the longest time, in fact, Sarah just told me the other day, I have a light in the basement that used to be upstairs. We moved the light stand downstairs to use.
Okay.
I never changed it from all the upstairs lights. So when I tell the A lady, hey, turn off the upstairs lights, that light off downstairs goes off too. Can you change that? You know, well, I mean, Christian, you know, those both the A and the G devices are attempting to be, you know, I use Home Assistant as well. And that's another thing, like, okay, so I put these LePro lights on the house and they connect with the Amazon Assistant, but not with Home Assistant. Mm. You know, and so there's those hub concepts too. Like you're yes. like, okay, I need yes. to stay in the ecosystem. Or do I?
Are you on the plus version of
Yes.
Okay. Yes. And how has that been?
Good. Yeah, not bad. The voice is weird and it changes from time to time, yeah. and I'm not exactly sure who I'm getting. Sometimes I feel like I'm cheating on the old A lady. Like,
yeah. Hey,
where did my girlfriend go? Like
yeah.
I used to talk to her all the time, and now you sound like you're a teenager.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah. Do you see any of that in your work?
Well, no, only because I have the original 1.0 Echo still sitting in the kitchen, and I'm like,
it's the tube.
Yeah. The black tube. Yeah. Of course it's not, even though I've enabled the account for plus model.
Yeah.
It's like, no. Yeah. And so, I actually reminded myself how dumb the OG one is just by being like, oh my gosh, like it's pretty rough. Like it's wild. Like if you want to measure how fast technology is moving in this era, just think about how that was considered cutting edge retail consumer technology, like what, yeah. 6-7 years ago.
Yeah.
And now it's like, people are horrified by that original experience. And so,
yeah,
truly both remarkable and brutal all at the same time.
No, right on. But has become, I mean, for a lot of folks has become their home automation hub.
Yeah.
Right.
I
think if you're a home gadget geek, you may be thinking about Matter. You know, I think for a lot of time we thought about Zigbee and Z-Wave, and then Matter kind of came along and it's like, no, it's Matter enabled, but most of them are really playing to the Amazon or Google space, right? For the most part in that. And, yep. And you know, we landed on Amazon a while back for those, and got them all throughout the house. It's hilarious. Sometimes we'll say things and one completely on the other side of the house will be the one that picks it up. You know, and you're like, should the bedroom have heard that when I was saying it in the kitchen, and why isn't the kitchen one, you know, picking that up? But, right. But those automations, certainly super helpful. I could have, you know, as we're talking about these LePro lights, I've yet to hook them up to that automation. I just haven't done it yet. It's available. I could go in there. I think that's pretty standard, right? For most of these home devices now, they're defaulting to Amazon or a Google from that standpoint. I put mine on a timer, you know, so I say turn it on when the sun goes down. It kind of makes sense, right? And then turn it off at 10 o'clock. You know, it doesn't need to be running all night.
Yeah.
You know, it's fine. It's just for the neighbors when they're coming home from work kind of thing, right? But there's all kinds of different automations you can do with those pieces,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
100%. So, yeah. Yeah. Well, home lighting is, you're right. This is one of those things when you're thinking about like, should I standardize? You know, and then you're just like, that's like another purchase plus.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Yeah. Not a cheap dude.
Yeah. If you were going to standardize on something, what do you think? Where do you think you'd go today? Would you go Wyze just because you have that infrastructure that's in place, or what would you do?
That's a good question. I have used both the Hue and the Wyze the most. in general, I feel that the concept of having to have a bridge is kind of antiquated, but I don't know that it's not like a big deal to plug it in your network and let it sit and run at the same token. So,
yeah, they're pretty efficient.
Yeah. But I don't, it's going to sound horrible, but like they both are lights and they kind of do the basic yeah. thing and they connect yeah. up and they occasionally yeah. get firmware updates. And so I don't know that I have a, like I said, I don't have a strong dog in the fight on a brand. Once I get locked into a brand, it's harder to want to change. But I don't know that I probably would value cost differential more than anything because I'm not in reliability. I would say the one thing that I think is a little bit weird about Wyze is I frequently find there are a bit of timing delays between when the app sees a device is on or offline and the actual device, which I find annoying sometimes. And like, maybe that's my network, but like I have a Wi-Fi 7 network on multi gig. So like if a Wi-Fi 7 with really good coverage can't do it, like yeah. what can? Yeah. Now I know a lot of those IoT devices and smaller devices are all on 2.4 gigahertz still. Yeah. And so,
yeah. Mandatory in some cases. They're like, don't put this on 5.
Right. Right. Yeah. And so that's intriguing. But ultimately like 2.4 is a less better range, but inherently less like reliable, channel yeah. to use.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm sure every one of those apps have their quirks. The other thing that I find is worth evaluating is how easy are the devices that, like, for most part, any of these devices will integrate with like Alexa Fine or with Hue or HomeKit or, you know, anything that you really want. Yeah. So that yeah. used to be a differentiator, and I don't really think it is anymore. Mm-hmm. Most of the protocols have kind of gotten the support that they need. So yeah, long way of saying that who you end up picking first biases you quite a bit. I think I probably index on cost more than anything else. And the experience with Wyze has been pretty good. I don't know that I would say it's been life changing. But it's gotten, you know, it's done what I've needed it to do, and their hardware has gotten better over the years. So
you mentioned firmware, which, you know, okay, as I think about the devices I bought just in the TP-Link space.
Mm-hmm.
So it was TP-Link at first, and then they became Casa, C-A-S-A, I think is what it was. Now they've changed to Tapo, you know, and those all had various apps. Some of them work cross-app. Some of the apps I never reinstalled after I got a new phone. Like, you know, and then you were like, these devices are dependent on the apps for the firmware updates because mm-hmm. you set them up with your phone in most cases, and yep. you gave them the, you know, so you're going into the app. You can kind of start losing track. I think I probably have 25 devices of some kind, a plug, a light, you know, those kinds of things. I'm not constantly checking for firmware updates on those. Should I be? And then should I be locking those things down so they can't call home?
My general view is if you have them on a IoT guest network and you have that guest network pretty locked down in terms of what it can get out to on the internet, that the risk of being behind on a firmware update is probably not the end of the world. That said, technically, like a Wyze bulb, for example, each Wyze bulb is IP addressable. So any one of those light bulbs that gets compromised because there's like a Bluetooth vulnerability or a network issue or whatever is technically a foothold on that network. So if you're going to be smart about it, just, I would say, like DMZ it off onto an IoT network and restrict it to talking to what it needs to connect up to the cloud for that brand. And then like, yeah, the attractiveness of, like, from a security perspective of attacking that hardware gets pretty minimized.
The other day I was looking at the Wi-Fi networks that were in the neighborhood, and some of these devices turn on to a Wi-Fi network.
Yeah.
Right away. Right.
Yep.
They expose that. Now they're getting, it seems to me, I could be wrong. Seems to me they're getting away from that in favor of Bluetooth. Then you get into it via Bluetooth and set up the Wi-Fi access that way. It seemed to me that I could be totally wrong on that, but I still saw 40 Wi-Fi networks, right, of various printers and just various, it was probably not 40. Let's probably say it was 15. Right. But still, yeah, a lot. I remember we used to, you know, drive around looking for insecure networks, and now it's easy. You know, you're just like any neighborhood, you're like all these, and they're not open. Right.
Right.
But they're broadcasting. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think most,
is that worrisome?
Not necessarily. I mean, broadcasting doesn't really shouldn't bother anyone as much as, like, are you on WPA3 and, like, what's the credential look like? You know, I don't know how many people are still into, like, the old school days of, like, people were driving, like, down the street, like, breaking web encryption, and, you know, that was a time. But it's interesting because, like, in my opinion, internet is pretty ubiquitous at this point, and so you got to be up to some pretty sketchy stuff to want to be like, oh, free Wi-Fi from my neighbor by cracking their router, when, like, you know, like, go get a 5G pod in your house for 30 bucks a month. And so it's like, if that's no longer, like, if we've gotten to economy of scale where people can, like, chill for a second and just go get some basic service, then the residual reasons for why one would want to hack on a Wi-Fi network are get increasingly sketchy. So,
yeah. No, right on. And I don't, you know, I see my neighbors, and I haven't even thought of, like, I wonder if that's open. I think we are, you know, in those early days, I think it was open by ignorance.
Oh, 100%.
Right. And I don't, you think we're pretty much past that? I mean, yeah, I think all of the devices are closed by default, and
most consumer devices are closed by default. I think the biggest thing that is still kind of just sad is that a lot of consumer devices will get put on networks with public IPs that have horrible vulnerabilities in the firmware, and customer has no idea. Right. So, like, in many ways, like, I worry much less about firmware of, like, the Wyze bulb. I'd be much more worried about the firmware of your TP-Link acting as your gateway to the internet.
True story. Good. Probably good to keep those up. Joe says all the open Linksys networks.
Yeah. That's a very nostalgic era of having the stack of Linksys for the 802.11b with, like, the little file share and the 10/100 meg switch. And they used to make some pretty fun stacks of Linksys hardware, and that's all. Those days are long gone.
Yeah, pretty much. And yet they're not. There's other things that replace them, right? From that standpoint. Hey, in the remaining time we have left, you shocked the world last time you were on the podcast by saying, hey, crypto, maybe I'm paying a little more attention to it. From that standpoint, the crypto market has, you know, pulled back. We had a rush back in the spring. It's pulled back this summer. It's quietly kind of coming back right now. Update us on it's 2026.
My 2026 prediction is we will be all-time highs in Ethereum. And
really?
I'm looking for a minimum of 7,000 price target sometime this summer.
Really?
Yep.
Wow. Okay.
And
it's three right now for anybody not paying attention.
Yep.
Right. We're in the three. So you're saying a double.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think that's a...
why do you say that?
Yeah. So that's a base bull case. I think there's a few things happening that maybe others are either not tracking or not appreciating the value of. So the first is that if you think about the main difference between Bitcoin and Ethereum, two things, right? One is Ethereum has applications in smart contracts. And so it is proving itself as being like, if you have to summarize Bitcoin, it's store of value. But if you have to summarize Ethereum, it's distributed finance, it's DeFi. So, or decentralized, sorry. But all of the Wall Street and all of the big money that has been sitting on the sidelines is starting to go on chain with this and build financial products around it. And then you look at what's happening with Ethereum and the fact that it produces a yield, and Bitcoin isn't giving you a yield, it's a store of value, but a company like Bitmine can with their Maven network, stake 30 billion of Ethereum token and produce $500 million a year in yield. So that kind of becomes very interesting all of a sudden, because now you're starting to act like a money market fund, or a bank deposit with a annual percentage yield. So now you get to, well, why have big institutions been keeping money on the sidelines, but also starting to invest in the kind of financial layers that make up the layer two, as well as the stable coins, which is a whole other segment of why I think Ethereum is the long-term winner here. And they're on the sidelines because big financial institutions want nothing more than crystal clear clarity on the rules by which they will play the game. And so the Clarity Act is making its way through markup. It was actually pulled last night. Brian Armstrong, CEO of Coinbase, pulled the support for it. So now they've pulled the legislation back off the docket. But I think they're going to figure this out and get over the finish line. And when that framework does get out and into law, look out, because all this liquidity that's been sitting on the sidelines waiting for rules, the rules are going to be there and the game will be played. And so I think many people understand how volatile crypto is, but I think they don't understand what are some of the moves that create that volatility in price action. And so I think Ethereum is a long-term winner because of some of these unique attributes that Bitcoin won't be able to replicate. The other thing is that from a payment processor network perspective, they are continuously upgrading the Ethereum network and making it faster and making gas fees and congestion get lower. And so like, it's as much the future of finance and certain, you know, advanced software as anything else that you could try to compare it to. And if you, you know, compare it to traditional primitives around like banks or money markets or credit card processor intermediaries, like they all see the writing on the wall. So like, it's not a surprise as to like why stable coins are becoming so interesting. And that's before you even get into the tokenization of assets, which is something that also Ethereum uniquely enables as that base layer. Stable coins can come on top and provide tokenization. And so, you know, a lot of these arguments that people used to have around like devaluing of the dollar or other assets goes away if they're just going to be tokenized, right? And so that narrative, which for years was extremely speculative, I think is much less speculative and is going to become very real, very fast when the regulations are done. And so I think you're seeing the technology nexus arrive. I think you're seeing the players are going to be getting off the sidelines this year. And so I think you know, if you do any technical analysis on Ethereum, very interesting accumulation phase that we've been in. And so I don't think you would see much trouble at all being at 40,000 plus for an Ethereum token by 2030. And that may be a conservative estimate. And so sure, Ethereum to do well from a price action standpoint, you want to see Bitcoin do well and continue to grow, store in value. However, you know, if you go and chart the Bitcoin to Ethereum ratio, which measures basically which one is performing better relative to one another's market cap, a technical chart analyst would tell you that there's an inverse head and shoulders pattern on that ratio. And so the expectation from that is that Ethereum will outperform Bitcoin in terms of percentage move. And so even though these two often move in tandem, I expect outperformance from Ethereum. And I think that the longer term value is there as a technologist that, like, don't get me wrong, Bitcoin's the OG, has store value, but I don't know that it's the long-term winner because the applicability to Wall Street, in my opinion, is not nearly as strong because I think financial networks and applications are going to actually be built on-chain on top of Ethereum. And I don't see who's got a better moat or better solution that's going to weaken that position.
Yeah. All those things that you're saying, I agree with. What's interesting, the price comparison between Bitcoin and Ethereum a couple years ago was pretty close. And then, of course, Bitcoin ran away and has gotten much more value. Now that's starting to reverse a little bit. I think both actually can do very well in the space. You know, in today's markets, equities fulfill some side of the market space. That's Ethereum. Gold has the other side, or precious metals,
because silver, 90 a share, or an ounce.
It's been on a run, right? Silver has been on a run for sure. That's the Bitcoin side of the market, right? Where, you know, you're like, what does gold do? It does nothing, right? But it's a store of value, like what you're talking about there. And so I think we're going to see, you know, of course, both gold and silver have been on a tear over the last 6 months. Typically that doesn't, you know, that pulls back some, but I like what you're saying. John in chat wants to know, it's Christian coin. Remember when we talked about Christian?
Maybe that'll be a stable coin built on top of Ethereum at some point. And I'll do a launch announcement on the show if I get there.
Yeah. Right. No, right on. I want to be first in on that one. You talked a little bit about, you know, I have moved some into USDC on Coinbase and, you know, 6 months ago, I was getting 4.5% easy. Like I couldn't get if I wanted to move that into a bank, I would have had to work hard. Now there were some, you know, during the worst part of the post pandemic, 4.5% at a bank was actually doable. I moved some fiat over to USAA bank, right? The traditional bank, right? So my insurance company, but they also have a bank, and I got 4%. Which I felt pretty great about. When have you been able to get 4% at a bank? Never. Not in our lifetime. We haven't, like, sure, in the 70s.
Yeah.
See that, right? But that's pretty much gone. But those USDC or the stable coins were offering some of those. And, you know, I didn't take out a second mortgage. But I had some savings that I was able to move over there. Now, as that follows the U.S. interest rate profile, right? And so we're at 3.5%. The Treasury Department or the Federal Reserve, and that's come down each time they've announced a rate cut. The USDC has cut that rate on me in Coinbase, and it makes sense, right? That they're using Treasuries for that, right? They do have some regulations. They got to buy some Treasuries with that. That's the definition of a stable coin, right? In a lot of ways, which is good. Like, I like to see stability in that space because I think it brings some predictability. And that's really what the market wants, right? The market wants some predictability in what's going to happen. They don't want somebody running away with this stuff or the shenanigans that went on, you know, 10 years ago, right?
Yeah, no, 100%. The market hates nothing more than how to price uncertainty.
Well, uncertainty is high risk. And some people love that, you know. Some people love that. The gambling has gotten out a little of hand. What's it, Poly Market, right? Yeah. I just heard today you can bet on housing prices
now. Absolutely. If they go, there's nothing you can't bet on Poly Market. That is the true joy of it.
Here's what's been interesting with that, and I want to get your take on this. I have traditionally been, I pulled my headphones out. There we go. I have traditionally not been a fan of gambling. But one of the things is I've been listening to the Wall Street Journal podcast is that we look at Poly Market and let's just say housing prices. Yes, okay, a little crazy to be betting on housing prices, but it actually gives us in some regards, a better view of the housing market because it's because 100%. These, right? Right. These bets are an indication of how people are feeling about it, right? Or actual stats, right? I don't know, talk about it. What do you think about that?
It's a very strong sentiment indicator. It's not unlike how, you know, all the polls predicted one outcome in 2024 and Polymarket predicted a case that was pretty much in the stratosphere of low probability for traditional polling data. But from Polymarket's standpoint, it was the most probable outcome. And so I think that when people have to put money on the line, all of a sudden, a lot of the noise in the data gets real cleared out and people are like, yeah, like not just like gambling in terms of like a roll dice and see if you get a double snake eye and you win a buck, but like actually put money on the table based on a logically reasoned outcome of why you think a certain thing will or won't happen. And then wager against that, and then multiply that by the number of people that want to participate in that wager. And that is an extremely powerful sentiment signal. And in some ways for people that do, investment in even traditional equities and, you know, there's macro, fundamental and technical. But a lot of those are still educated bets that you go into. And then conviction is the only thing that distinguishes a bet that fleshes you out from a bet that pays a reward. And so Polymarket for me, because a lot of them are date bound too. Like right. The bet is this certain definition of condition by X date. And that almost sounds like an option contract to me. Exactly like an option contract to me. And then of course you're paying with it and betting with it in crypto. So it just makes it all the more, amusing how it's it's just a different financial instrument that happens to be more intellectually interesting.
Well, any system can be gamed. So everybody's always like, well, what about the fraud? It's everywhere, right? You're going to have moments where systems are going to be gamed. I mean, we may be the last 2 years, let's just say the last year, maybe the most insider trading we've ever seen in any situation, right? Just because the gloves are off and it's out of control, right? And so, but in some of these markets, like you said, because you're betting with something that matters, you can't just do it. Like when things are free, they don't work for the most part, right?
Right.
But when you're putting your money up, all of a sudden now you're getting there's some stake. Right. I mean, it's the same thing that when we stake in crypto, it's the same idea. Yeah. Right. You're saying, no, I'm going to put my money on this and I'm going to leave it there for whatever length of time. You know, Ethereum staking doesn't require any kind of commitment. You just do it. Now it's 2%, but it's still staking. Right. Yeah. I think there's, to your point about Ethereum, I mean, I don't know what the latest figure is on the stake, but there's a lot of it being staked on Ethereum. And that is a signal in itself, right? You're like, no, this is people who've put money. This is value in on this. And so, it was the first time I thought, you know, because I hear these gambling stories and I'm like, oh, come on. Are you kidding me? Like, this is the dumbest. And then as they were talking about the housing market today, I'm like, oh, actually, that may not be, you know, when we're trying to get market data on housing prices, that may be a really super clear indicator, you know, especially as we think about October when the government shut down for 45 days or whatever, eventually whatever it ended up being, and we can't get government data. That may be the next, I hate to say the next best, because it still might be the best source.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, even the government data is dependent upon certain polling of certain information from certain people in certain places. And when the U.S. government shuts down, we're not getting that idea. Maybe Polymarket's the place to go to get that data, right? I wonder if they bet on unemployment. The unemployment numbers.
I don't know what they don't bet on at this point. We'll put it that way.
No, right on. There's not too many times in life where you have a moment where you change your mind on something. And I had at that moment, because I've been hearing about this poly market, and listen, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to bet on those things. It's just not what I want to do. But when as they were talking about this, and a guy came on and he was like, yeah, this may be the best indicator of actual housing prices, because people are thinking of, because it causes people to think, it causes people to research. And I mentioned this the other day, insider trading, it may actually flush out insider trading, because the market, if you're betting that way, all of a sudden, when the bet goes wild that way, what's going on here? Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, it is almost an open sourced, like if all of a sudden there's big bets coming in a certain way when it doesn't make sense, right? As long as those ledgers are open, right? As long as we can see the ledgers. And I think that's maybe a little bit what's different here. I don't know. It was just an interesting thought. I don't know. You have any other thoughts on that?
No, we live in exciting and interesting times in space. And, also Polymarket as a news source is actually really interesting to me, because if you subscribe on X to the Polymarket channel, they'll do like breaking news on certain like things and bets, but like they're very relevant to like world news and events. So that has been actually a more interesting way for me to consume and engage. It'll be like, now 51% are thinking X. And so like, that's a very interesting signal in and of itself to get in your feed. So
listen, I work for a polling company. This is super interesting, right? Because the challenge is always to get a representative sample.
Yeah. Now, instead of a call center, you have people putting money on the line at high percentage. It's like kind of interesting.
Yeah. I mean, and I'm not saying that's a representative sample,
right?
It's interesting, right?
That is actually very true. You are correct that the people that would be making bets on Polymarket may not be a representative sample by any means. Yes. However, they're a very interesting community of ideas. So,
well, they may be the most engaged,
right?
In it, right? I mean, it's just, listen, it just brings up, it's super interesting. It's a little bit of a new, I haven't thought all the way down this space, but it's been a little bit as I was listening to this, and I'm like, oh, like, wait a minute. Okay. I've always just brushed this off as like, that's stupid gambling stuff. Like, why would anybody, you know, I'm not a big gambler. I'm not a big fan of that. Although we say that, listen, even those of us who aren't gambling, when you buy your house and you take out a mortgage, you're gambling on a certain time that you're getting a certain interest rate at that time, whether it's going to go up and down at another time, right? Now, some people say that's not a gamble, but we spend more time than you think gambling on stuff. I'm not a traditional gambler. I don't like doing it. It's not my favorite thing to do. But these ideas of people betting, large amounts of people betting on an outcome of something that they're interested in, is a signal. You know, and so you're kind of, as for the first time, I was like, oh, okay, I'm not going to do this, but this could get really, really interesting. You know, this could get really, really, I've always been intrigued by how Vegas gets the football. They get that right all the time. Like, you're like, how do they get the spread so right? You know, and we may have a Vegas spread for world events or for economic indicators, some of those kinds of things. I don't know. I'd love to dialogue with you on that. I don't know how I feel or think about that. I'm just starting to think about that way. But Christian, thanks for we didn't plan on talking about that, but it's always good to spend some time catching up with you. Anything new at Maple Grove Partners before I let you go? Anything new at Maple Grove Partners? You guys still just plugging along, providing great high speed.
That's right.
Storage.
That's right.
From people that you know and you trust.
We hope you trust. Yeah.
Nice. Still plugging along. Well, good. Anything else new before I cut you loose?
I bought Microsoft Flight Simulator, or I received Microsoft Flight Simulator 2024, and I can perfectly It's the first, let everyone be known, it is the first application that actually does something with the rig I built back in 2020 that was super overpowered, right? So like my graphics card actually has something useful to do on ultra mode now because I can actually use it to fly all of my instrument procedures in practice. And I have the Cessna 172 layout there. I can do all the practice approaches. Like it's actually really great. So I got the Logitech hardware, which is like, it's middle grade stuff. It's nothing like to write home about, but the actual like, yeah, Microsoft Flight Simulator 2024, pretty radical. And it has extremely realistic aerodynamics.
Maps are crazy, right?
The maps are crazy accurate. Yeah. You can use real live traffic. It's really cool.
What I want, so I tried Flight Simulator back during the pandemic. You know, I built this really sweet rig, I think 2023, 120 gig of RAM. It's got a Ryzen 5. It's got a 3060 in it. I mean, it's good for me, right? Yeah. Not the top, but good for me. And I downloaded Flight Simulator and I just couldn't. I didn't have the patience or the ability. What I really want is the AI version of Flight Simulator where I say, okay, I want to take off from this airport. Let's go to 10,000. I want to have the mic and I just would say, okay, 10,000 feet. And then, okay, let's go to 15,000 feet. Now, turn left and head on this course. I need a navigator. I need Sulu being my navigator on that thing. I need to be Captain Kirk.
I love that.
And I need Sulu. Can I do that in Flight Simulator? Is that
you can do? You can definitely dial it down to the dummy mode that doesn't use the real aerodynamics for a given plane. So you can make it so that it's like, oh, I'm immediately crashing. You can avoid that, but I have not tried to put it in dummy mode because I need it in real world flight conditions for it to be useful for me.
I don't want to actually fly. I mean, I want to fly. I want to tell it where to go, but I don't want to actually do any of the necessary.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Like, pilot stuff.
Yeah, that's crazy.
You know, how cool would that be? Like, because like I want to fly over Rome, or I want to fly to Moscow, or I want to like.
Yeah.
But I don't want to do any of the hard work of figuring out how to trim and autopilot and all of that.
Just punch in an airport code, crash on approach, and then it'll reset you in the sky, and then just kind of fly straight and level, and you'll be fine.
Crash on approach.
Yeah.
Listen, I crashed a lot when I had Flight Simulator running. I was like, I don't know what I'm doing here. I don't know what I'm doing. Okay. I can't just, it's not AI-ified to where I can just say, I want to go to San Jose International Airport, charter a flight to Tokyo.
I mean, you can definitely punch those in as source and destination airports and pick out the flight you're going to go in.
Push buttons.
Yeah. That's the simulator part of it instead of like, maybe you need to ask the Xbox Game Studios to make a Microsoft Flight Tour.
Yeah. And, yeah.
It's like the touring edition of,
well, what got me thinking of this was you can go to Google Maps and I can go to Omaha and there's a flyover.
Yeah.
Right. They have a flyover mode. Yeah. And I was like, well, this is cool, but what if I could control it? Like, I want to control it with my voice. Or you know, whatever, right? Super simple controls. I don't want to set trim and airspeed and all those kinds of things. You know, I want to
take all the fun out of it, man.
For you, maybe. I don't want to do it. I know you're doing real pilot stuff. So so good for you on that one. But okay, I'll keep looking. Listen, if you're out there listening and you got a way for me to do this on Flight Simulator, that's actually something I'd come home and I'd be like, you know what? I'm gonna do a flyover of Dallas Fort Worth, right? And I'm just gonna fly around, just bank, see amazing. All the things.
What truly amazing!
Great. It'd be awesome. Do some loopity loops, whatever. Anyways, Christian, thanks for coming out tonight. Always great to see you. Always great to have you. Thanks for 15 years, man. Thanks for hanging out with me. We'll do more here on the network. I had full transparency. I'd kind of planned, was going to wrap up Home Gadget Geeks that night. I was going to be like, you know what? I think I'm going to take a long, you know, I think I'm going to take a long break. And so I was headed that direction. And then as I got into December, I was like, yeah, no, I don't think I'm going to. I think I'm having, you know, I don't know. I have such a good time doing this and hanging out with people. So I was like, well, I'll take a couple weeks off. I took 4 or 5 weeks off. Mm-hmm. We'll come back and do it again. So here we are. And Christian, thanks for being my friend over the years. It's
100%.
Been great to hang out with you. Can you hang out with me for 1 second?
Yeah.
Close it up.
Yeah.
Okay. Just a couple reminders on the way out. If you want to join us in the Discord group, and it's not a very busy one, but it is one. If you want to join and got some questions, we've got some deals from time to time. Folks are dropping in deals out there. You can add up to theaverageguy.tv/Discord. And then don't forget the averageguy.tv platform, both web and media hosting. We've been talking about this a couple times tonight, powered by Maple Grove Partners. Get secure, reliable, high-speed hosting from people that you know and you trust. So for more information, lots of plans, still $10, Christian, to get something rolling out there is yeah. All right. That's the best. Listen, it's cheap now. Like yeah. You're not finding that anywhere.
Yeah. Prepay annually $10 a month.
Yeah. MapleGrovePartners.com. Christian will do just about anything for you. He'll get it locked in. We got a couple shows lined up. Aaron Lawrence is coming back here in a couple weeks. I got a special guest from the spacesafe.com talking about, let me see. Hold on. Let me pull this up really quick. There's a whole new line of home safes that got some technology built into them. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that. I've kind of gone back. Every once in a while, somebody will reach out to me and say, hey, can I come on the show? And I said, yes. So Oscar's going to join me next week. And we're going to talk about that. Andrew Morris, speaking of 15 years, Andrew Morris, you remember that guy, right, Christian? Mm-hmm. Andrew's joining me. I was speaking with him the other day. He's coming back in February. And then Erin Lawrence is coming back on the 19th. She got booted by the internet when she was here in November. We're talking about Black Friday stuff. So we'll have her back on. We are live every Thursday, 8 p.m. Well, not 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern, out at the Average Guy Live. Be back here in a week or so with more stuff for you. Christian, again, thanks again. We'll see you guys next week. If you're joining live, stay around for a little tiny short post show. With that, we'll say goodbye.
The screens glow bright and the Wi-Fi peaks. If you're looking for the tech talk you can actually keep, then settle on in with Home Gadget Geeks.